Hey everyone, thanks for joining me today. This is the Faraway Farm Boy podcast, and I'm your host, Dustin. Before I introduce my guest, I'd like to give a shout out to my sponsors. This podcast is made possible by Livestock Veterinary Services in Pitcher Butte, Alberta. Livestock Veterinary Services provides a wide range of services for livestock, including dairy herd management, cow-calf herd management, advanced reproduction services, medicine and surgery, and many more. If you're ready to see their expert veterinary team, call Livestock Vet Services today at 403-732-5322 or make an appointment at livestockvet.ca. This podcast is also brought to you by Chinook Dairy Service. Did you know that Chinook Dairy Service can fine-tune and optimize the performance of all brands of milking equipment? Call Chinook for a free milking system evaluation today. Today's guest is a friend of mine from right here in Fort McLeod, Alberta. He is a salesman for a company that sells Keenan feed mixers and InTouch scale systems. Please welcome Braden Van Driesten. Braden, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Dustin.
So we were just talking about dry land production here, and some of it's actually doing okay, which is weird. I thought we're going to be completely wrecked in our area of the world, but...
Yeah, it seems like anywhere kind of south of where we're at here near Fort McLeod, you tend to see a little bit better of crops south and then west. So I've been hearing out in that Glenwood and Hill Spring country that there is some fairly good crops. So,
like last year, I think by Pincher, they had pretty good ones too. Seemed to catch a few more clouds.
Yes, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
So I guess we should introduce you. Who are you and what do you do?
So I'm Braden Van Driesten. I look after Keenan feed mixers for Canada, as well as InTouch feed management systems.
Right. I was thinking before, why did people call you Feedright?
So funny story is that my great uncle Tony used to own the feed mill in Fort McLeod. A little bit of a history deal is that my dad would buy, they'd buy feed from him. And at the time the feed company was called Feedright. And I used to have a hat. And I used to have gloves and a coat, and everything would say Feedright on it. And I would always wear it to school, being that young little farm kid.
You were born to be a salesman. Yeah, right?
And what's the crazy part is now that Alltech actually purchased Master Feeds, and Master Feeds bought Feedright. This would have been probably I think it's 10 or 15 years. Don't quote me on that, but. Master Feeds actually bought Feedright. Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
So they sell dairy feed too, right? They're in the area, right? Master Feeds?
Master Feeds does sell.
Okay, dairy but feed. You're in the Keenan division of Alltech.
Yeah, so the Keenan and InTouch division. Yeah, it's so we run completely separate. Like I have interaction with them, obviously, because we work for the same company.
Right.
But I'm strictly devoted to the machinery as well as the technology behind the mixers, as well as the technology behind the feed management systems.
Okay. Yeah. So not just the Keenan mixer machine itself. Like you can get the pull type and the truck mount, but you guys do scales and the technology behind it, like the scale system you were talking to me about the other day.
Yeah. So it's feed management. So it keeps track of all your ingredients, all your inventory, and basically delivers you a report and eliminates the feed sheet. So more feed sheet, everything becomes digital, and it creates, other than just being a scale head and eliminating the feed sheet, but it creates consistency and accuracy.
Right.
Definitely in the cows, for sure. And that's what we see day to day, is that it helps the producer understand exactly how much he's feeding. And anytime that we can dial in and understand how much these animals are eating, as well as dry matter intake, it not only helps the farmer, but it helps the nutritionist.
Right. Yeah. And you can just like get pinpoint accuracy, right? Like anything that can help you do that, you know, and get a consistent feed in front of the cow. Do you guys do mostly dairy, or is it kind of beef, feedlots, everything?
So we have a few feedlots, but on the InTouch system is that it's more directed towards the dairy industry, for sure.
Okay, yeah.
Our portal combines all of your actual income over feed costs, fat, protein.
Oh, yeah, right.
So it compiles it all into a portal. On that portal, then you can see your margins, and then, you know, your cost per liter. It breaks it down. It gives you that good view of understanding exactly what you're making.
Is that a Keenan product too then, or is that Alltech, or what is that?
So Keenan first developed it in 2008, and they were having it with just a USB stick. And the USB stick would plug into the scale head, which would only download rations. So you just feed your rations. But then they created what is called the DTM. And the DTM essentially is where you can modify your rations and you can put in your dry matter and take your inventory. And that's and where we are today is that now we're able to link with certain softwares like Lely T4C, De La Valle Del Pro, Uniform Agri, Dairy Comp. We can link all that data. So then all those numbers come into one central portal and one viewing area. So, and it's all cloud-based.
How does that work? Like, how do you use T4C data in your feeding?
So what it ends up doing is it takes your milk production.
Right.
And then it combines your feeding and how much the cost.
Oh, it just puts the two numbers like right next to each other type thing?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Like we need that so bad in the, in dairy, like a whole management system. Like there's so many different things like a feed system, and then you have your T4C, and if they could just all talk to each other, I think, you know, like it has to be possible.
Yes. Yeah.
Like, but I think there's like data laws, right? Like Lely doesn't, or Lely, for example, doesn't want to sell its data to, you know, Keenan or whatever, right?
Yeah. Yeah. But we're getting to that point where the companies, with all these different systems that we have, they all have to align and get along, because otherwise then they start losing customer base.
Yeah.
I think where what we're really trying is to hone in on the feed. Now, I could see in the future definitely where all these systems will go into one central area.
Yeah.
It's almost
That's got to be coming.
It's got to be coming.
Alltech could do that. Alltech's a big company, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Does Alltech do tags too, or am I thinking of something different?
No.
What's the tag one?
All Flex.
That's right.
Yeah.
Alltech is actually a really big company, right?
Yeah. So Alltech is in 127 countries worldwide.
Right. Yeah. And that's where I remember Keenan is the number one mixer in Ireland or something?
Ireland.
Or in the world? Or
No, Ireland and the UK, they have a huge presence in Europe.
Yeah, right.
And they really do, like I say, is there's so many Keenans that are sold like worldwide. Right. They just weren't a big thing in Canada up until about 10 years ago.
Right.
Is when they really started to roll them out.
Sell it to me. So the main mixer, the pole type is what, that's your like, what do you call that? Your main product, right?
That's main one.
That's why. Okay.
Yeah.
So sell it to me.
So a Keenan keeps the consistency behind the Keenan is the chop length. And that's what they call mech fiber. Mech fiber is that scratch factor that you feel in your feed, right?
Right.
So a lot of mixers that are on the market, the conventional vertical mixer, twin screw.
Right.
That mixer acts on friction, right?
Okay, so, yeah.
When it's acting,
and this is a horizontal, right?
This is a horizontal.
Yeah.
So when you're acting on friction, you, for example, you have a Trili, right?
NDE.
You have an NDE.
Really old one, yeah.
Okay. So the NDE, or just any vertical mixer, it's not that they're, now that's not me knocking them, they're not a bad machine. They're a good machine. They consistently chop. You can throw the bales in there. It'll chop it up. The thing is with a Keenan is that it'll do the same thing, but the main difference is that the cut length. And the cut length is that the mech fiber concept is that it's sharp edge cut, so you can feel it. It has that sharp edge. So like imagine if you took a piece of hay and you threw it into a blender.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
The chances of you getting let's say four even cuts on a piece of hay. It's slim. It's going to have some inconsistencies, right?
Yeah.
Where Keenan is that it's allowing the feed to drop because it's a paddle mixer. It's allowing the feed to drop.
Right.
And then it pulls it a set across of four even knives. That's the way the sections are built. So when you drag it across a set of four even knives, you'll get close to four even cuts.
Okay.
So that's where we're limiting the error with the chop length. So between the hay and the straw, we're getting close to the same length. And the big thing is that a lot of guys will tub grind. That's a very big thing that you see day in and day out people tub grinding.
Yeah.
We're keeping the integrity of the fiber with a Keenan machine. And that integrity of the fiber is basically ending up, it's forcing more rumination inside the animal. And when it's forcing more rumination inside the animal, it's slowing the animal down and you're getting more out, less out the back end, and you're getting more utilization.
Right. But you don't want it too short. So is that all in mixing time or?
So that's the thing is with a Keenan, once it's chopped to the right length, it's very hard to overprocess.
Okay.
Because it's hard to hit the same knife. Again, it flows like water between the knives once it's chopped.
Okay.
Because the chances of that muzzle length cut that we're going for.
Yeah. Between the nostril type.
Yes.
Yeah.
So they can't.
They can't sort it.
Exactly. Right. So when they're going is that. That's what we're seeing at the bunk is that the cows end up, and it's very crazy. And it's crazy for me to say this on here, but the cows, after a while with the Keenan machine, end up eating less and milking the same amount.
Eating less? We want them to eat more.
That I understand, but it's basically that the cows, we're aiming for the cows to be more efficient on the feed.
We can agree on that, but yeah. I would say that you want the cows to eat more. Like I was just talking to someone today about driving dry matter intakes, right? It's not a new idea. Although no. I would agree, like if it's more efficient.
Yeah. But you can still bring that dry matter intake up. The cows just become more efficient at processing that, right?
Okay. Just because that chop length is good and...
Yeah. And it's creating more rumination inside the cow. And it's a fluffy mix with a Keenan. It's fluffy. There's no dead spots. So there's no places for the grain or any of the small ingredients to sit.
Right.
It's completely tumbling. That feed is always, always moving, but it's gentle on the feed. So we're keeping the integrity of that silage and the integrity of the forages.
Because with feedlots, there's a lot of grain and stuff, like a lot more than dairy. And then a vertical doesn't necessarily work for a lot of them, right?
Well, yeah. If you go in feedlot alley, the chances of seeing a vertical mix in a feedlot is very, very slim.
Yeah.
It's just that the vertical is made... For chopping and processing those bales, and that's what it's made for, right? You like, for example, with a four auger harsh, you can't throw in a round bale. It would never work.
Yeah,
it would plug it, right?
Yeah,
I would hate the guy to see.
Have you ever? Did you ever shovel any of those empty? Growing up,
which mixers?
Yeah, yes. What do you call them? The Cadillacs?
Like yes,
the...
I have. We had a blue Cadillac with the GMC top kick at the farm, and we were adding lots of hay.
Was that the one that went to Moon River?
That is the
one.
Moon River.
I worked in that one as well.
Shoveling. I have had to shovel mixers. Yes.
When the chain breaks or whatever.
Yeah.
Brutal.
And you're trying to push as much forage as you can. Right. And that's the thing. Yeah. Those machines are made for grain, mineral and silage.
Right.
Those four augers.
Not for breaking up big soggy round bales.
Exactly. So where the Keenan kind of meets is that it's not a vertical and it is a true horizontal, but it's a horizontal mixer that can chop hay.
And there's because of that big knife in there.
The big knife, And there's no knives. So like on a Keenan, very often we have like a full knife set is about 36 knives in the bottom.
Oh yeah, there's a big paddle that pushes it over the knives, right?
Yeah, that's right.
The knives are stationary?
Stationary knives, yeah.
Okay.
And that's the thing is like with it, so it's a horizontal mixer that can chop hay. It has the consistency of the horizontal mixer, but the chopping action of a vertical.
Does it require any more horsepower than any other?
For our biggest mixer at 1,000 cubic feet, we only need 120 PTO horse. Now, the big thing is that these machines are heavy.
Oh, yeah, right.
You need to pull it. I remember the first one that I ever demoed was at, they end up having one on a truck is Jake Boot. But they had a 110 horsepower case tractor on the front. 110 PTO.
As long as it's dry.
He put a concrete block on the front to keep the front tire down, but loved the mix. Loved it. He was hooked, right?
Yeah.
And that's the big thing, right? Huh. Is that these machines are so heavy and you know, I wish they were a little bit lighter, but that's the big thing, right? Is that it doesn't take much to run them. It's six bearings and a spline shaft, no gearbox on a Keenan. Very simple machine. Yes.
Huh. And a chain?
Two chains. So an idler chain that runs the unloading auger.
Okay.
And then a main drive chain that runs around.
And how many hours does it take to shovel out when that chain breaks? Have you done that as a sales representative? Or?
No, I haven't. The only time that we've ever done it is we screwed up on our hydraulic. Like how much we needed to have the pump tuned by.
Okay. And it wouldn't turn?
Yeah. We didn't have enough power going to the pump. So we just stall out the pump. But as soon as we took an Allen key and just cranked it just a little bit.
How long did that take to figure that out? It took
a long time to figure out. Yeah, long time. But
those things are tricky, right? And there's not too many like experts on that type of stuff. Well, like mechanics and stuff, but like hydraulic motors and like all the, because they're just so specific.
Yes.
You can bring it anywhere you want, but there's only like one guy in Canada that knows, oh yeah, that's the right Allen key to use for that specific, you know, part to turn it up.
The guys that we lean on that help with mounting our truck mount mixers on the hydraulic end is Flowdraulic out of Calgary. So Hendrik van Scotthorst, actually, and awesome guy. Guy knows hydraulics inside and out, and he helps us with that. And because we don't require so much power, but we require torque. But we're able on those Keenan mixers to run, we save people on hydraulics because we don't take as much as a vertical, right? So we end up.
What do you mean?
We don't take as much power as a. We don't need as much power to run it as a vertical.
Okay.
Like for torque and horsepower.
Right.
So we're able to run smaller hydraulic systems and save people money when we're doing the truck mounts. Yeah.
What do you need for like a truck? Like how much does that cost then? Like for your typical average midsize box?
Just the box or box and truck?
Well, the truck, that's, yeah. If I'm comparing like truck versus tractor, what would you
I would say recommend? That I would say, you know what, it's kind of depends on the farm. You know, you get a lot of these bigger farms, they're doing lots of loads a day. You know, historically truck mounts have been huge in this area, right? You're from BC. How often did you see truck mounts in BC, right?
Not very often, unless the guy had two farms or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, but I say for dollar wise, you know, trucks, last time we quoted out a truck, the truck's costing, you know, $210,000 for just the truck, you know, and then we're talking about a, you know, $120,000-$130,000 mixer on the back.
Right.
Starts to add up pretty quick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're in it for the long run. I mean, the truck will last, you know, 20 years or whatever.
Oh yeah.
What's your typical Keenan mixer? What's going on it when it goes, like knives, obviously, you know, like a couple years or what? Depends how much it gets used.
So knives, if you're doing, if you're a dairy farmer, you're mixing 365 days a year.
Yeah.
So we're saying that you'll get 3 years out of your knives if you're mixing three times a day for 3 months.
Then just take the grinder to them and just sharpen them up and you're good to go.
You can sharpen them a little bit, but at the same time, we always want people to replace them, right?
Yeah, of course you do.
Yeah. that's the part side. But yeah, no, we always, you know what? And you don't have to change the full set. Some guys will buy half sets, right? And then they throw a half set in a year and a half.
Right, and then try to remember which ones they replaced.
Well, you can tell. Later. Yeah, you can tell. You can just because of wear and tear, right? But
the main
knives that you start seeing more wear on are in the center because that's where the feed's passing.
Right.
It pushes it out to each side.
Where you drop that big round bale in, that big block of concrete.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. I actually bent the spindle on mine. I had some hay that was, it was okay hay, but it just stuck together in big blocks and it was super heavy. Just dumped her in, just boom. And then I didn't look. It was like half a year later, I looked in there and one of the sides of the spindle was like kind of bent down a bit. Yeah. Still mixes fine.
Oh, that's exactly right. I've seen
like pretty old.
I think we can all agree. We've seen some stuff that should never be dropped in mixers.
Yeah. So you were working at this, was it actually called Feedrite when you were a teenager? What would you say it was? Just the mill or whatever?
Yeah.
But then you went to work for Bovary after that or?
No, I never worked there. I never worked at Feedrite. I was just a, oh, I was I just see, a, yeah. My dad bought feed from my uncle in town, right?
So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then you went to work for Bovary?
So my dad, he's the operations manager for the ag side as well as just oversees some of the plants and stuff. So, with Bovary, I worked there since, you know, 12, 13 years old. That's where it all kind of, honestly, that's where kind of it all started, getting into agriculture.
Yeah.
We still farmed at the time. We still have our farm.
Right.
Just actually 7 miles out.
We're basically neighbors. Yeah.
That's right. So yeah, we, we still were able to farm, and we had our own farm. Then we worked at Bovary, and between me and my brother, yeah, spent a lot of time there.
Yeah. Yeah. That's where you got all your ag experience.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. Yeah. It's you know what? You just experience like so many different avenues of, you know, you get baling, you get combining, you know, working in the feedlot, you know, bedding pens, feeding, just everything kind of really aligns there. And it's cool. You know what? They're a big part of Fort McLeod, and they hire a lot of people, right?
That's that we can agree on. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Like they hire, between them and, Faders, they hire like most of the people in Fort McLeod, I'd think.
Yes, for sure. Yeah.
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 Yeah. But pretty cool. Like I used to work at Moon River there on their buffalo feedlot there. That was pretty eye opening. I'd never seen that before.
Right? With Tom, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. Yeah, that was awesome. Like buffalo are totally different than cows, right? Like
totally different.
You got to respect them a bit more.
Yeah.
I remember we were sorting once and like we had this ratty old quad there and like we were trying to chase buffalo into one pen. And, like Tom had to ditch the quad and bail off the side and the buffalo just torqued this quad out of the way, like just lifted it right in the air and out of the way.
There, I've seen so many chasing bulls and stuff, and you're in a truck and you just feel small when you're beside them.
You got to be like really respectful.
Oh, they pack twice as much muscle as
and they
as
can't a beef. See, like they're so if you like, I remember when we were bedding pens at the feedlot. If you surprise them, like if you put a bale down, just kind of like go out from the side of the bale to cut the strings and stuff. And you kind of surprise one, they'll just like react, right? Because they don't see you really.
Yeah. And they're not different bred. Animal. They're not bred for domestication. Those are not domesticated.
Yeah, it's animals. Weird, right? You'd think after like how many generations of buffalo they'd kind of domesticate, but they don't. They just have that wild streak in them.
There's not enough. I don't think there's enough breeding. You know, we've been breeding cattle for thousands and thousands of years to get what we want, right? And there hasn't been enough with the bison, like to hone in on.
Is that the professional term, bison? Is that what you're
saying? Bison. I say bison. Yeah. You know what? It's the buffalo thing is just because a lot of people walk it over with water buffalo or whatever, right? So the American bison is what.
Yeah, yeah. And there's two types, right? The wood buffalo and the
plains buffalo. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And the woods ones are darker or something?
Woods ones are darker and generally bigger.
Okay.
Plains, so they have been crossing up. Like there's no. Like once they've started feeding them and whatever else and breeding, they've been crossed up, right?
So we're actually speaking with a real, like the buffalo jump is right there. We're speaking with like a real native here. Like you're part of this land basically.
No, and you know
the buffalo like no one else.
No. Hey, it's
at the buffalo jump, those ones are they plains? They're plains bison then.
That's plains. Yeah.
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 All the dead ones there.
Yeah. That's right.
It's a National Historic Site or whatever.
Yes. Yeah.
I still haven't been there.
Still haven't, eh?
No. I got to go there with
you the kids. Live in Fort McLeod.
Yeah, I know. It's like 10 minutes down the road. Every time we go to the hills, we pass it. But, okay, so that's why you got into agriculture was...
Yeah. So like what...
You're kind of born into it and...
Well, what ended up happening is I worked at Bovary and then went to school at Olds College. And then... went there, had some fun for sure. And then after Olds, then I went to Lethbridge and then from...
What'd you do at Lethbridge?
Business. Yeah. Okay. Just got a business certificate. And then what I ended up doing was then after that, then I took a year off as just a welder helper.
Okay.
And then I went back to Olds because a bunch of my friends were going back to Olds and I took ag
took nothing really.
Yeah, like... ag entrepreneurship and finance just to play my volleyball years out, right? So
oh yeah, right. You're good at volleyball.
Yeah, I guess. I guess. Yeah, it's I played college volleyball. So
cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's like any sort of division or what does that mean? Like, do they have A's in there, like AA, AAA?
I played ACAC. So like that's basically like the Alberta League that they had for college. So
okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Huh. So yeah, it was good. You know what? It brought me up to meet a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And I still know a lot of those people in the agriculture world. And that's a huge thing is that my connections, like the connections that you make meeting people, it's insane. Like where it can take you. and what you can do with it, right?
Oh yeah, same with the podcast. Like, you just get to meet random people, right?
Yeah.
But are you saying that about volleyball or olds?
Just, you know what, volleyball in general as well as college, both.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it forces college, especially. I did a 1 year, what was it called? Livestock production certificate in the Valley. Mm. And it kind of forces you to like meet people, right? Your first day, like I did it right after high school. So yeah,
yep.
It was like super shy and very, very sheltered, like super sheltered. But it forces you to meet new people and like confront new ideas. And it's kind of cool, right?
Awesome. Yeah. Anytime. Like, I think the big thing is that that's a good thing about the whole social media that's really brought on is that it's created connections and the way people do things. Like, it opens your idea up.
Yeah.
And we're only getting better. Like, we're not going, like in business and in agriculture, we're not going backwards.
Yeah. I guess. Yeah. You're right. I mean, we're only getting leaner and more efficient.
Yeah. Because the margins are tight. They're getting tighter.
Yeah, they always get tighter. You're right. There's no going, you know, they're going to pay us more for what we produce. It's like, no, that doesn't happen, right?
No.
So it would be nice.
It would. Yeah, it would be nice. Yeah, it would be nice.
But people, you know, it's not like we would keep getting more efficient then.
Yeah.
That goes for a lot of industry too, right? Like, it's not like people decide to pay them more for their product.
Yeah.
Although, like, now with value-added products, I think there's something to that. Like, I think, I don't know how this works because millennials don't have any money. Like, I'm a millennial and I don't have any money, but according to some stats, millennials are willing to pay more for a value added product. Like if something is like organic or GMO free or whatever, you know, and they see that GMO free salt on the shelf and they're like, oh yeah, I'll pay an extra $10 for that container of salt. Right. Yeah, I don't know, like, why they would do that, but there's some stats that would say they do.
Yes, yeah. I think our big thing, especially with that, is you find a market, right? You have a marketing ploy. You look at, like, A&W, you look at, like, even McDonald's and stuff, which McDonald's does a hell of a job helping out with farmers. Like, they're always going, like, give back to the farmers, right? But you see like A&W and some of these big corporations where it's like, oh, grass-fed beef. Well,
yeah, you know, that's such BS.
If we really want to hone in on it, barley can be technically a grass. So we could be feeding these animals in a feedlot and no, you know what I'm saying?
But I think, like, they're finished. What was the specifics on that? They're finished on grass?
I think they're finished on grass, yeah. And that's, and you know,
it's
what?
It's all Australian anyway, but.
Yeah.
Brazilian.
Yeah. Yeah. But nobody talks about it. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know anybody that's like raises their hand here as a rancher. Like, and maybe if there's a rancher out there, correct me if I'm wrong, but there's not too many ranchers out there that I raise beef for A&W. I've never seen any of them stick their hand up. Right.
Like, yeah.
No, exactly. Right?
I've heard of people going above in, like for, restaurants and stuff like that. Like they'll, ultrasound their beef to make sure it's AAA and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So that's cool.
That is cool.
But that's a niche market, right? Like it's pretty tough to get into.
I think what we're going to see the future of that kind of agriculture and like the milk niche production side is that niche market. I think there's going to be a lot more on farm sales tactics where they're going, you know, starting their own little grocery store, their own little co-op that they're selling direct.
I kind of agree because what I said about millennials, they're willing to pay for that niche product that maybe has added value, but like who wants to spend all that capital on farm processing? Like it doesn't make sense to me because there's two paths, right? For me, I can go niche with that sort of thing, on-farm processing, and, you know, Creekside Dairy in Chilliwack does a really good job of, you know, they have their on-farm processing and cheese and stuff like that. But, you know, they're probably on their Facebook page, like, all day long updating and, like, sharing cute calf pics and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But the other side is you can scale, right? That's all you can do. You have two paths. You can go niche or you can scale up.
Yeah.
So I don't see how the niche thing works, like, unless,
Do you, well, one that I love and like, so he's actually a Keenan dealer of ours. It's Curtis DeDude. Do you know him?
No.
Okay. So he's over near like near Vernon, like Grinrod. It's okay. Called Farmer John's.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I've seen his, yeah.
Yeah. So Farmer John's and like, it's kind of funny. Shout out to Curtis. But he's, yeah. So what they end up having is they have this little store deli type
thing. Yeah. I've been there. Yeah.
You have?
Yeah. Yeah.
And they have a bar, a dairy barn in the back.
Yep.
And
a viewing area. It's really nice.
It is awesome. That to the producer, huge.
Like, yeah.
And to give back to the people, right? Like these people understand, like then they see it with their own eyes and see the hardships behind it and be like, that's cool. You know, like a lot of people, that place is hopping. I was there 3 weeks ago. It's hopping.
To a certain extent, I don't care about that. I care about the numbers. Like, what are those people bringing into that business? Like, if you offered them a $10 piece of cheese, like a way overpriced piece of cheese, are they going to buy it? Or are they going to go, oh, this is so cool, and then leave? You know, like, oh, this is so nice. And then go back. They'll go back to Osoyoos and rip across the border and grab their milk and come back, right?
Yeah.
Or go to Abbotsford, you know, rip across the border and come back. Well, not this year, but.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think there's those people that still will, like you said, millennial side, they pay for something that they know that it's from there.
How can they, though, in the future when there's, like, there's, millennials don't have money. Although, like, during the pandemic, apparently people had more disposable income than they did before the pandemic.
Yeah.
Which is crazy.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't know. Like, when I'm in the grocery store and I see something that's like value added, you know, you have your typical salt and then you have your non-GMO salt.
Yeah.
Like I'm buying the typical salt. I don't have money to spend on all the other stuff. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
It doesn't make sense to me,
but I think that there's always a market. It's just how you present it.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
Look at Keenan.
You know what? We're a new brand here and it's, you know what? There's been some good days and there's been some bad days, but you know what? We're in the trenches and we're
with a new product. Yeah. I think you're always going to have that, right?
I think our biggest gateway to the farm, because of consistency, accuracy, and understanding milk production, income over feed cost, and measuring that, it's in touch. Like we got 100 in Canada now, like 100 in touch systems on farm.
Wow.
Yeah. And, like in a couple of larger producers, right? Like we have some, you know, 1,000, 1,500 cow farms, right? That are using it and they're benefit from it and it's creating that consistency, right? And they're seeing it in a different light. Like we had another example. It's kind of cool. So guy had commodity base, right?
All right.
So he had two ingredients that he's feeding with his commodity base. He's feeding one lactation dairy supplement.
Okay.
Like mixed already, right? Like out of the commodity bay. He's feeding soybean meal out of commodity bay, right? And then what he did is he had bins. He had three bins.
Okay.
And they were grain. I think the other one was canola meal, whatever. It was, it was run by an auger. Well, his inconsistencies weren't at the auger. Weren't at the bins. His inconsistencies for his loading operator was at the commodity bay, right? I'm guilty of it. I've been, I did that. You know what I'm talking about.
Small farm for sure. A big flake of hay falls in. I've been feeding like 100 pounds too much hay for years.
And that's, so you start doing the numbers. You start looking at that, you know, on the soybean meal and that lactation supplement. Now I'm not saying the farm or anything, but they were $17,000 out in 6 months on soybean.
You could tell because of the system.
But
you can game the system too, right? Like I used to feed at Gracemar in Chilliwack on weekends. And then like they had a similar system. Mm-hmm. So like once you went up to a certain ingredient, it would say on the scale head. And then you just press next ingredient and then it would add it to the next ingredient.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Then...
So InTouch doesn't do that. So InTouch is like, InTouch stays on the same ingredient. That's one thing, is that it wouldn't change the next ingredient to accommodate, right? Like InTouch Keep, like you have to load correctly, loading in.
Yeah. Okay. Because yeah. Then my boss would always, we'd have a competition who could feed the most accurate, right?
Yeah.
Which was a good competition in the boss's eyes.
I think we need more of that because the like when we start seeing, yeah. you know, $9.20 a bushel for barley.
Crazy.
Like, this country runs off barley. That's what scares me, right?
Yeah.
It's a lot of money.
Yeah. What's canola doing these days?
Like canola meal?
No, the price of canola.
Oh, what I've heard, you know, like a lot of guys locked in it, you know, they didn't think it was going to go up. They locked in it $12-13 and they're pumping their fist in the air. Well, I've been hearing rumors that anywhere between 18, I've heard $18 all the way to 21.
Wow.
Yeah. Which is crazy money. But
did you guys put any up or?
Yeah, we have, at our farm, we have, what is it? 1100 acres of canola. So
on the reserve?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yep. Yeah,
yeah. Irrigated or?
No, dry land. Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah. So, yeah. And
what'd you guys do?
Pardon?
What'd you guys do as far as locking in?
We locked in right around, you know, five bushel. So five bushel right. at about $13 and now we're kicking ourselves, but you know what?
But at 13, you still make money.
You do. But this year, you know what?
And you're only getting five bushels an acre off that land. Anyway.
that's what I mean is that this year, if you know, it's going to be tough. You know, if we get, you know, 10, 15 bushel rate, then
is that right?
It's going to be tough. Yeah. It's dry.
So that's the same land that you were saying that you got 60 bushel on the barley?
Some of those fields ran 60. Yeah. Yeah.
And it's doing 15 on the canola?
We haven't even gotten into canola, Dustin. We're probably 3 weeks out, 3 to 4 weeks. So I don't even know what the canola is going to do. But from what we see, it's light.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know what? From last year, Dustin, last year was probably the best year in Southern Alberta history.
It was pretty good.
Yeah.
It's pretty spotty sometimes, but I think you could say that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we've historically, like I've talked to older farmers and guys that I've looked up to over the years and we've never seen prices like this, right?
But so the rains were good last year, not the price.
That's
price only happened this year.
Yes.
And then it's going up still because of our limited production this year. Like
that's right. Yeah.
Because usually it goes down this type of year. Harvest hits and your futures go down, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Crazy.
But back in the day, remember the guys would always be like, oh, we're going to hold on to our grain. We're going to put it in a bin, right?
Yeah.
There's going to be a lot sold off the combine this year just because of the price, right?
Yeah.
Because it's not going to go up, right? Like
that's what you guys said.
Knock on wood, right? Knock on wood. But we had a hell of a start. You had to admit, we had a good start this year.
Did we? I can't remember. I can never remember the weather like 8 months ago.
Yeah, but we did. We did. There was
4 months ago.
There was a bit of rain. It was, you know, we were seeding in the moisture.
It was all right, yeah.
Yeah. So, but it's, you know how it goes. Farming, it's a gamble. It's a riverboat gambling trip. Used to work for a few guys that were grain farming in Saskatchewan. And they're like, you're going to hit it 1 out of 10, you know? And, and you hit it 1 out of 10, it keeps you going. So, but you gotta love it though. Ag's a fun place to be.
Yeah. I say that too. Yeah. Like I moved from BC to try and farm here. Right? In hindsight, I guess I could have moved to Merritt or something.
What do you mean? You're doing it.
Yeah. I'm really doing it, Harry.
That's right.
No, I really enjoy it. I always say if I wasn't doing this, I'd, you know, go work for somebody in ag too. Probably not the wisest decision, but I love what I do. So.
Oh yeah.
It's fun.
Yeah. No, and that's the thing is like, it's funny how farm kids, because you're either a farmer or you're selling to a farmer or you're working for a farmer.
Yeah. You don't see many people like getting into farming that lived in town, right?
There's a few.
Investors.
There's a few that are, you're right. Like investors are looking for places to put their money, but, there's only really like if I historically think back, there's only one that I know of.
Like, yeah, not many like kids.
And I worked for him for a few years, right? So,
yeah, like kids you graduated with, they're not like, hey, you know, I go work for a farm and then they start farming. It's like, not, that's not really a thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Unless their grandparents own land, then you do see that, right? Like if their parents grew up in town and then no one wants to take over the farm, the grandkid comes in. But even then, right? Like they still want, a lot of the time those grandparents still need money to retire, right? And
yeah. So where do you think that's going, generally speaking, in Canada? Because that's a case all over Canada. As this, because we're in a space where like most of the land owned right now is by like 55 to 60 whatever years old, right?
Yeah.
And that succession has to happen, just statistically speaking, in Canada.
Yeah.
So like,
you know, that's a good question, and I hate to be radical, but it's the game's gonna change. And it's already changing. We can see that, right? It's going to be, if you can make it work and you can figure out a way to, you know, like, for example, that's what the dairy industry is really good about. Same with the chickens too, is like new entrants, right?
Yeah. To a certain extent. Yeah.
But it keeps people in and it gets new faces in the industry.
Yeah.
I think that if we see something out of the if we have to see something out of the government where there's an incentive plan or an opportunity or a grant that keeps these younger kids farming, because otherwise it's just going to be it's going to be corporate farms.
Why is it the government's problem though? It's our problem.
I think so, but the inflation of land it went from, you know, 1500, 2000. Yeah. And now we're seeing $6,000 an acre.
For dry land.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And on a year like this year, you can't pay the interest, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It doesn't quite pencil out.
I don't know if it's anybody's problem, but it's crazy, right? I don't know.
Yeah.
That's a hard question, Dustin. I'm sorry.
You're not optimistic about the future of ag.
No, I am. I think there's cool things coming. It's just, how do you get into those, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like how, yeah.
Because you have these investing companies like, you know, where the pension plans buying up land and like China or whatever else.
Yes.
Buying up land. And they can afford it because they have old money or government money or whatever else.
Yeah.
But if you want to do it from a kind of just a new entrant perspective.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's fair. It's tough. I know for even like with me and my brother farming and my dad and stuff, is that just trying to do as much as, you know, you do a little custom work here, you try to rent some land, you try to make it happen. Right. And as long as you can keep doing that, you can still stay in the farming opportunity.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Just side jobs.
That's exactly right. Yeah. That's exactly right. So, yeah, I don't know. Yeah. But you know what is, it's good opportunities where you see a lot of the kids lining themselves. Like, you know, I have a lot of friends that, you know, their grandpa and grandma or like even their mom and dad still own the place, and it will be a generational farm. They're going to be farmers, right? You know that. That's going to keep us alive, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah. I hope to be farming still. Yeah. Right? So, you know, if I look back in 20 years, I hope I'm still farming, but
yeah. Change without notice or subject to change without notice.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah. So, yeah.
Huh. Well, thanks for coming on the podcast. It's been fun.
Yeah, for sure.
I think we, hit a whole bunch of stuff and just fix the world problems. So I think, like we can leave here happy knowing that we fixed a whole bunch of problems with egg in general. So
that's right.
Yeah.
Do you mind if I do a shout out?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
So
shout out to my homies.
Yeah, that's right. So, on our side here is that if anybody's interested in InTouch feed management systems,
right.
It's our dealer in British Columbia's West Coast Robotics.
So oh, okay. I didn't know that.
The Lely dealers there right. out. Yeah. So great guys. Denis Langtois, he's the FMS guy. He'd be the guy to contact, either that or Brian Ronenberg. The InTouch dealers in Alberta is Penner Farm Service. So
okay.
That's Aaron Dominicus in Northern Alberta and Dave Newman in Southern Alberta.
Okay, I know Dave.
Yeah. And then...
is he your competition then, or?
No. He's a dealer.
He's a dealer.
I just support the dealers, right? I help them sell.
So. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And then the other guys that we have is in Saskatchewan. We have Chris Sunby at Western Ag Systems. So they're a division of United Agri Hub, which is amalgamated with Penner. So in Saskatchewan. And then
Penner Farm. I have a friend that works with United Agri Hub.
Okay, really?
Yeah.
Yeah?
In BC. Oh, no, right, he works for... Oh, shoot. I got to ask him.
Yeah. And then the other one is that Penner Farm Service in Manitoba is our in-touch dealer there. And it's getting bigger. We're getting out there. And there's, like I say, is we got some awesome farms that are already using the system. And yeah, it's if anybody's interested, right?
So. Yeah, for sure. And I guess, yeah, I'll put your number in the description or something.
For sure. No problem.
And then, I just get a royalty or whatever. It's pretty simple stuff. I'll shoot you.
I'll have you on In Touch soon enough, Dustin. Maybe even donate. Maybe even sponsor the podcast.
Hey, who knows? Hey, I'm listening. Okay. Thanks for coming on. Take care.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to the Faraway Farm Boy podcast, episode number 43 with Braden Van Driesten. This podcast has been made possible by Chinook Dairy Service. Did you know that Chinook Dairy Service can fine-tune and optimize the performance of all brands of milking equipment? Call Chinook for a free milking system evaluation today. Join me again next time on the Faraway Farm Boy podcast.